Hello and welcome to episode 145 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
Oh, hi.
We're on our game today, guys, and we have a very special episode for you. This is our best of 2016 episode, so we're going to share some of our favorite movies of the year, and the way we're going to do it this year is a little different than last year. This year, because our lists were so drastically different and we want to cover just everything, we're each going to tell you about our top three movies of the year. And we're going to kick it off with number three, then move to number two, and then finish out with our favorite movies of 2016. Christy, you are up first to share your number three.
Yeah, my number three of the year is one that caused a lot of hubbub, not only because it was not like something we'd seen before, but also because it's not technically a film, but fuck that. Lemonade is amazing. It is Beyonce's visual album, and I before was always kind of like, yeah, Beyonce, whatever, and like didn't really care about her at all. And then by the time track two kicks in and she's in that bright yellow dress and kicking down that door, I was on board for this. It's just an astonishing film that is, I mean, it may not be considered feature length, depending on what category you're in, but it's like, it tells you this complete story, and it's musical, and there's dance, and there's drama, and like, fashion plays such a huge role, and just the style of the songs, and I listened to this album maybe more than Hamilton this year, which if you pay attention to my Twitter feed, yeah, like, I'm not messing around. And Lemonade was just, it was come by all these different directors, and I just have never seen anything like this. I think Beyonce changed the way we think about albums, and like the idea that now we're like, oh, the visual album. That's not a thing we ever said before. This is like Michael Jackson stuff. Like when he did Thriller, all of a sudden people were like, I don't know how to process this, but it's amazing. Like that's what happened with Lemonade. And I am just still in awe of Lemonade. And so I wanted it to be on this list, even if we're still quantifying whether it's a film or not. I vote it's a film because it's amazing and it deserves all the attention.
Hey, it's your list. You could put whatever you want on it.
Damn straight.
If people are putting OJ Made in America on their list, spoiler alert, not on our list, but some people I've seen that on their list, then yeah, Lemonade fucking counts. So I will actually just now move right into my number three, which is not Lemonade, not OJ Made in America, and something that everyone definitely considers a movie, and that is Manchester by the Sea, the new movie by Kenneth Lonergan. I saw it really early in the year because I caught it at Sundance last year, so like almost a full year ago, and I was blown away by it. It's one of those films that's, you know, almost definitely going to end up in the Oscar conversation because of the performances, whatnot. But what I love about it is that it's a film about grief, but it's not misery porn, and nor is it one of those movies that's just like, oh, you know, it's like life's tough, but you'll get past it. Like what I really love about it is that it's just so it's very like unsentimental. It's sympathetic. It's empathetic toward its characters. It doesn't like pile on unnecessary misery, but it kind of. I find comfort in the way that it just has this clear-eyed understanding of like, yeah, sometimes some things you never get over. Some wounds never heal. Some things can never be fixed. And sometimes your world stops and shatters and it's the end of the world for you, but the rest of the world keeps on going. And as a result, it's actually kind of a, like one of the things that I was a little surprised by is that it's obviously not a comedy. It's definitely a drama. I cried a lot, but there are lots of moments of humor. And I found that to be something really interesting because I thought it sort of added to the way that, like, the way that life keeps going when, like, it doesn't really give a shit if you're suffering. The rest of the world keeps moving. And it also, and there's a lot of humor also found in the way that all the normal conventions of how society deals with grief are just laughably inadequate. I just thought that it was a really, I thought it was a really moving, really honest portrayal of grief and something that is weirdly uplifting in its own, like, you know, in the way that it's just like, yeah, no, I get you. Sometimes life sucks and sometimes that's what you need to hear. So I love that one. Also, really quick, Lucas Hedges, the kid from Moonrise Kingdom and Zero Theorem, that guy is fantastic. Keep an eye out for him forever.
Yeah, he's awesome. All right, so my number three. Very different from Lemonade and Manchester by the Sea. My number three of 2016 is Green Room. It is the, I guess, a horror thriller, you'd call it, directed by Jeremy Saulnier, starring Anton Yelchin. And I saw this movie last year at TIFF, and I fell in love with it from the moment I saw it. However,
You're speaking so warmly about this movie. I know. Which I share your sentiment, but I just love that you're like, Green Room. Man, I love it.
It really just speaks to what I love. It's like my kind of horror, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And as sick and twisted as this sounds, one of my favorite forms of horror is, you know, the slasher type, where you have a group of people that you enjoy being with and you grow to love, and then you watch them get picked off one by one. And that's kind of what this is, and that's what made me love it so much on almost like a surface level the first time I saw it. But the more you watch it, the more you realize how many different wheels are spinning at the same time. It's not just about, you know, your main characters as the good guys trying to survive and save the day. There are so many different agendas going on at the same time in this movie, and the way Jeremy Saulnier approaches it is he doesn't necessarily even paint anyone as the quintessential good guy or bad guy. It's like everyone's just fighting for kind of the way they live and what they do. Obviously, what some people are doing in the movie is freaking evil and bad, but the way he tells it from everybody's perspective, it's just, it's this whole
he provides like agenda depth, that but I was like, no, he's definitely against the neo-Nazis. Let's make that clear.
Well,
there's no,
obviously he's against them. I'm trying to address certain things without spoiling things, but certain people are out to do certain things. And even if you do look at Patrick Stewart's character, obviously he is not a good person, but he's doing what he needs to do. And rather than the movie be like, bad guy, it makes you understand what he's trying to do and why he's doing everything. And there's so many little bits and pieces to everybody's agenda. And to watch them all collide together and explode is just so incredibly thrilling. The look of this movie is fantastic. I love the fact that everything is kind of bathed in this green and it's really gritty. And when you got things happening to dogs in a movie like this, and I still like it, that means something. So there you go. That's our number threes. Lemonade, Manchester by the Sea, Green Room. Moving on to number two. Christy,
I was trying to think of some sort of segue between Green Room and my pick, and I got nothing. So Swiss Army Man. this was a movie that played at Sundance, and it was known as the Farting Corpse Jet Ski movie with Daniel Radcliffe.
It sure was.
Yeah, and coming in the wake of, like, Victor Frankenstein, people were kind of going, like, wait, what is Dan Radcliffe doing with his career? But you know what he's doing? He's taking beautiful risks and delivering incredible performances. I wrote earlier for this year for IndieWire that Angie was kind enough to share again, where I said that realistically, like, Daniel Radcliffe deserves an Oscar for this role, because it is exactly the kind of thing where he is rejecting ego, where he is allowing himself to be other than we think of him, which is, like, charming British boy. He's, like, a farting weird corpse that has, like, a boner compass. Like, it's The Revenant for Daniel Radcliffe, but in a way where it's so much about the performance and not about, like, give me an Oscar, because this movie is too weird to ever get an Oscar, and I know that. But it's like, this is a movie that it's a love letter to weirdos, and it's so strange, and it's so beautiful, and by the time I saw it, my expectations were so high, I thought there was no way it could live up to them, and I was like, well, what am I going to do with all this, like, excitement and enthusiasm when this movie sucks? And no, I laughed the whole way through it, and then at the end, I cried because I was really committed to this story about a lonely man played by Paul Dano who meets his person in this reanimated corpse. And I know that all sounds super weird, and that's actually perfect because that's what Swiss Army Man is, and I loved it desperately. I'm super bummed I didn't get a screener because I wanted to watch this over and over and over again during the holiday.
Actually, Sundance is, like, fucking representing on our list right now, because I saw Manchester at Sundance, Swiss Army Man at Sundance, and then I saw my number two of the year, Love and Friendship, also at Sundance, so,
I watched that twice over the holiday, and it gets better every time, Love and Friendship.
Yes, so my big, so this, like, one pet peeve that I've always had is that I don't think enough people appreciate how funny Jane Austen is. She has a reputation as a romantic, but I've always been like, no, have you read her books? Have you read the language? She is hilarious. Whit Stillman fucking gets it. Love and Friendship looks like it's gonna be, like, a stuffy, like, period drama, or maybe, like, at most, like, a dramedy, like, you know, like how New Yorker cartoons are supposed to, like, how arch, like, write that, like that. But no, Love and Friendship is laugh out loud hilarious. It has one of the very funniest performances I've seen all year from Tom Bennett, who plays, he plays this rich idiot, and just, like, from the moment he appears on screen, I couldn't stop laughing, and it just, like, every time you think that he's gonna, like, be done. He just keeps going, and it gets funnier and funnier, so he's great. But it's also, like, one of Kate Beckinsale's best, like, it's one of the best roles of her career. She's so good in this. And it's, and she plays a woman who is, basically, it's like marriage is a game to these people, but it's not just a game. It's kind of their careers, and nobody is better at her job than Kate Beckinsale. It's a movie that really kind of celebrates how ruthlessly ambitious she is, and I think it's really rare to see a movie about a woman just, like, you know, relentlessly pursuing her career and celebrating her for it. So I love that about it, but it's also just full of, like, really weird, like, really funny witticisms and, like, just lots of truth bombs. Chloe Sevigny's in it. Like, I think I've seen probably at least like three or four times by this point, and it just cracks me up every time. It brings me so much joy, and I already can't wait to watch it again.
I'm pretty sure we structured this show in a way that makes it completely impossible to do a proper segue ever. So my number two.
I did a proper segue. Do not.
All right, you're the only one who wins that competition. All right, here you know what I saw three times this year?
Oh, there
Rogue
you go.
Rogue One: A Star Wars Story. There Damn. You go. So. Like Christy said before with Lemonade, I feel the need to stress this with Rogue One. And I'm not doing it because it's like, oh, it's a bad movie. It's just for me kind of thing. Like, top tens are just so personal. And especially when it comes to a movie like Rogue One, if you're so into Star Wars, I understand some people complaining about fan service. But one, I think it's a good movie in and of itself. But the reason it's so high on my list is because as a Star Wars fan, the connectivity between this movie and what comes next just blew my mind. And there's a scene in particular, or a sequence in particular, towards the end where I can't remember feeling that revved up and excited and, like, scared and tense and happy in the theater. I was just so overwhelmed by how well Gareth Edwards did what he did at the end of that movie. And then, again, another personal element, but if... I don't think the movie is completely reliant on the book, but as I've said on our Rogue One review, I think if you've read Catalyst, it's just amazing how the Star Wars film franchise and the Star Wars universe overall just ties together all their material in a way that everything can stand alone. Everything can enhance something else. And that there's so many characters in this that I fell in love with like I did in the original movies. I'm a huge fan of Felicity Jones as Jyn Erso, and it's something that I come to appreciate the more I watch the movie. Diego Luna needs a lot more credit than he's getting because his character has one of the best arcs in the movie. Obviously, K2SO is my new favorite, one of my new favorite droids. I still love my BB-8, but K2 is excellent. Gareth Edwards, I think, did an exceptional job with this movie. I understand all the reshoot drama. Who knows who did what? Who changed what? I don't really care. What I ended up with feels like a Star Wars movie. It feels like a unique war movie. It feels like a Gareth Edwards movie, and that's exactly what I wanted from this. All right, the time has come. Number one time. Christy, what do you got?
Yeah, so my number one movie of the year is not really a surprise if you've been following me on Twitter because I cannot stop talking about The Handmaiden. It's Park Chan-wook's adaptation of this like British romance drama thriller thing. And it's a movie that I sat down being like, I like this director. Let's see what he did. And I was just swept away again and again. Every time I thought I understood what this movie was, it did something else that kind of like belly flopped it again. And I was like, what are we doing now? And I don't want to like sell it on the twist because that's not it. It's that he's such an effective storyteller that you're kind of following the swoon and then he surprises you with something else. And it's like, it's just thrilling and exciting and sexy. And it's a film that is just so smart. And it actually reminds me of a Jane Austen movie. I described it as Jane Austen meets Old Boy because it is, again, about like marriage and the business of marriage and the duplicity that goes on in that. But then it's also a Park Chan-wook film. So there's like elements in there where you're just like, wait, where are we going with this? And like the final sequence is like all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, I remember what we're doing here. I remember who made this movie. And I just think it's astonishing. And what sucks is it's not going to get nearly the kind of attention it should get this year because it's not South Korea's pick for Oscar, so it's not going to be nominated in foreign film. And I just don't think not enough support got behind it and the people releasing it, so it's not going to get like an Oscar push. So to me, this is the best movie of the year, hands down, and you're really not going to hear about it come Oscar time. So make it a point to find The Handmaiden, because it is beautiful and it is strange and it is thrilling and it is sexy and it's weirdly really funny.
When I was putting together my list of movies this year, like, weirdly really funny was a theme that somehow kept coming up, and I completely agree about The Handmaiden. But moving on to my number one of the year, also probably won't come as a surprise if you follow me, because I've been talking about this movie pretty much fucking endlessly, Moonlight. Yeah, the other reason it's not a fucking surprise is because every other person has it as their number one also. I'm not original here, but I fucking love this movie. Like, I have seen it, I think, 3 times in theaters. I would watch it again right now if I could. I would watch it tomorrow if I could. I feel like I could watch it every day. Like, this is a movie that, like, the first time I saw it, I wasn't, like, underwhelmed wasn't the right word, but I kind of walked out being like, okay, that's not quite what I expected, and I wasn't really sure what to make of it. But then in, like, the days and the weeks that followed, I just really couldn't shake it. I couldn't get it out of my head. I couldn't stop thinking about these characters. And I feel like what Barry Jenkins and everyone he's working with has done so well is that when I'm watching it, I don't just feel like I'm, like, you know, just watching some dude, like, go about his life. It's like, it feels like for 2 hours, like, I'm living a complete other experience. It feels like I am Chiron. It feels like I'm, like, in this corner of this world that I don't know that well, you know, surrounded by people I don't know, but it feels like I'm home. And I know that sounds really, like, melodramatic and strange, but, I mean, that's the power of movies to me, is a movie that just really transports you, like, lets you live some other life, is some other existence entirely. And that's what this movie did for me. Everything about it works so well. The acting is, you know, some of the very best of the year. I think Mahershala Ali is probably a favorite to at least get nominated for supporting, and I am fully behind him. But also, like, Trevante Rhodes, who plays the oldest version of the main character, that, like, there are moments in his performance that I just think about every day. Like, he just blew me away. I'm so excited about this movie. The score is just, like, so beautiful and so full of that kind of, like, longing and empathy that pervades the entire movie. So, yeah, Moonlight, my number one favorite movie of the year.
Alrighty, and rounding it out, my favorite movie. Surprise, surprise, especially if you follow me on social media. It's La La Land. I can't stop talking about it. I can't stop seeing it. Oh, and funny thing is, I've seen it in theaters 3 times. That seems to be a trend this episode. I'm surprised how much I love this, because I don't dislike musicals, but I don't tend to have the patience for them. And I don't tend to have the patience for, like, stage theatrics where it doesn't feel real to me. This definitely could stem from the fact that I just made the move to LA, and especially the industry we're in, which obviously is still the entertainment industry. But, you know, we're doing things that, it's not a traditional career. It's a shot in a million to, like, get it exactly where you want. It just feels like a crapshoot all the time. Like, we're fighting for a dream that we really want that feels, like, just out of reach all the time. And that is why this movie kind of meant so damn much to me. And just the way that you work a relationship into that, in most situations you would expect, you know, I don't want to spoil anything here, but a happy ending where everyone gets what they want and they live, you know, happily ever after. This movie teaches a lesson, no matter what industry you're in or no matter what you're doing, where you can't have everything you want. And I think that bittersweet ending to this movie is kind of what made it so special to me, because, I mean, that's something I struggle with every day. And I think Emma Stone, I want her to win that Oscar so freaking badly. Every single time I see this movie, I know it's coming and I still cry during audition. Every time. And I'm not a big fan of crying in movies. Something about me crying when she sings audition is like the good cry that I never really understood, and this movie makes me feel, and it makes me so happy that I could feel that now. I love that. I love all the other songs. I listen to the soundtrack on repeat, intermixed with some Sing Street, but I love me some La La Land. I think this is just so fantastic. Damien Chazelle is incredible. I can't wait to see what he does next. I love this movie. I am going to be rooting for it all the way to the Oscars. All right. So that's it. That's the end of 2016. It was a good year, though.
It was a shit year. There were some movies we liked.
Well, you know what I mean. In movies.
This year was a dumpster fire that I'm glad is fucking over. But hey, There were some good movies.
If we're strictly talking about film,
there were still a lot of really bad movies.
There's a lot of really bad movies every year, but when it came to breaking down my list for my top of the year and then also my best horror of the year as a big genre fan, this was a pretty freaking awesome year for studio horror, too.
We were going out on such a positive note, but you know that you and I fought religiously about every horror movie this year. I think we both liked The Conjuring 2.
I didn't mean to bring it up in that respect.
This was such a happy podcast up until
Perry did it. Perry started it. No, that's not true. I brought up the 2016 was a dumpster fire.
Yeah, Christy. Yeah.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Before this gets out of control, that's a wrap on episode 145 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You guys know where to find us. We're on iTunes, where you can rate, subscribe, and leave some comments. We're also on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. Please like us on Facebook. We also have our website, popcornprosecco.com. All three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to go first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. I write all over the web, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com. That's also where I have my full top 10 list and my career highlights of the year. And I'm also on SiriusXM's It's Eric Nagel. So look for that. We are going to come back on the station proper in late January, but right now you can find us on iTunes. So please download us and check us out.
And you can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff. I write for Collider.com and I'm on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. So thank you guys so much for listening. A very happy new year to you, and we will see you next time.